Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim Wildman. Today's Issues is the name of the show you're listening to on the American Family Radio Network. We're talking about a lot of stuff today. Walker Wildman keeping our Facebook page active, and we're streaming the show live. The video, our studio cam is active for today's issues on Facebook. And what else you got? You posting all the articles we're talking about?
Yes, I have. Right now we're doing Facebook Live, and I have all of the articles we've discussed, including, as we've mentioned several times, the PepsiCo CEO, who is
distraught.
Very distraught over this Trump win. And all of her employees are crying.
She said the CEO of Pepsi says all her employees are crying because Trump won, and they don't know if they're going to be safe or not. And so it's very – we're not making this up. This is what the CEO of PepsiCo said. Hey, just on another note, and then we'll go to Steve. Jeremy Wiggins is going to stay in studio with us today. Ed Vitagliano is not here.
Does that make me the poor man's Ed Vitagliano?
In a way, yeah, Jeremy. Looking. But that's I wanted to give kudos to Dallas Cowboys quarterback Tony Romo. If you've been following this story in football, Dak Prescott is the rookie quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys. Well, yeah, Tony Romo got hurt in the preseason. He was a 10-year veteran, was going to be the starter, and Prescott was going to back him up. Well, Romo gets hurt in the preseason, and Dak Prescott has to step in and has done a great job, to say the least, and the Cowboys are like, what, 8-1 or something like that right now? Could be easily be 9-0. And so there's been some controversy about, you know, will Tony Romo be inserted as the starter once he gets healthy, and Dak Prescott be put on the bench, even though he's led the team to a great record? Well, yesterday the Cowboys beat the Pittsburgh Steelers in Pittsburgh on a late game drive engineered by Prescott, the rookie from Mississippi State. And so Tony Romo was, I guess, ask after the game about this, and you would think he just said that Dak Prescott was, quote, the man. And in other words, I'm giving him kudos for being a unselfish person. He could easily say no comment, or I don't care how good he's done. It's my job.
Right.
And I'm getting it back. Or he could, you know, something non-supportive of the guy who's replaced you and led them, the Cowboys, to such a great record. Anyway, it's a great story, but I just thought it was classy of a guy like Tony Romo.
He's been in the game a long time. He has a lot of respect.
Yeah. And he's rich.
Yeah.
He can afford to sit out one season.
Yeah, he's getting paid anyway. But I just thought, you know, instead of saying something like, well, it was a good game, but I can't wait to get back on the field, something divisive. Instead, Tony Romo said that Dak Prescott is the man, and I thought it was very classy. And Prescott himself has also said that, you know, it's Tony's team, Tony Romo's team, so they've been very complimentary of one another. Of course, everybody's happy when you're 8-1, right? It's losing that causes dissension.
So wait, team, you mean they want what's best for the team?
Yeah.
It's not about necessarily who's out in front, but they're working together to be the best team they can be. Well, how does that counteract what we're seeing on the streets in Chicago and other countries?
Great analogy, Jeremy. Great analogy. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Well, Steve Jordahl is with us with American Family Radio News and OneNewsNow.com. How you doing, Steve?
I'm well, Tim. Thank you. Hello, Jeremy.
Good morning.
What's happening? What's happening in the news on today?
Well, over the weekend, Donald Trump announced some of his staffing for when he takes office. Ryan Priebus is going to be his chief of staff. And Steve Bannon, whom for some reason I want to call O'Bannon, but Steve Bannon is going to be his primary counselor, one of his leading strategists. This, I think, speaks volumes about the way Mr. Trump is going to govern. Reince Priebus, Republican establishment, the people that he kind of hacked off a little bit during this election, is going to be his chief of staff. He's going to have, he's going to work with these people. Steve Bannon, said to be kind of a representative of the angry or the unsettled majority that got him into office, is going to be equally influential. They both have his ear. This is kind of the model that he uses in his businesses, which is to set up a couple rival factions and listen, let them fight it out as far as policy. But I can see, this is what, if I can make a prediction, this is where we're going to hear the first cries of dissent from within the Republican or conservative party. Donald Trump said, in an interview this weekend, Bernie Sanders said he would work with Donald Trump on several issues, minimum wage being one of them, which Donald Trump has said he's in favor of looking at. Equal pay for equal work for women. I don't know if he's said much about that. But the trade deals the TPP, et cetera, that Bernie Sanders riled his base up against, Trump is also against. We might see some actions with regard to those issues that are more Democrat-leading than Republican-leading. But this is, the way he's going to work across the aisle.
Trump and Sanders, I think, did intersect, Jeremy, on some of those, I guess you could call them trade deals and economic international agreements, if you want to call them that, that affect the American people, the American worker. Now, you got to be careful because, and this is where I lose my understanding of how all this works, quite frankly. So I'm not going to act. Admittedly, I sound smart, but I'm not on this. And that is these trade deals where it turns into protectionism. In other words, that most, especially conservative economists, would say is bad. Mm-hmm. For our economy, if you get into trade wars and things of that nature. So,
well, some interesting news coming out. China has already said that if Trump implements some more restrictions upon them in this trade war, because China is typically the ones who run trade, we run a trade deficit with, they make all the money off of us. Mm-hmm. They've already said they're going to, I think it was a 45% tariff against the United States if Donald Trump pushes forward on some of these. So China has already fired the first shot in the trade wars. But on the other hand, though, I saw news that the Canadian government has said that they're willing to take another look at the at NAFTA. So there's a lot of movement in both fronts, pro and maybe negative, concerning Donald Trump. Really, it's going to be a lot more about, as he's filling out these positions of the people around him, that's where the policy is, I think, is really going to start to take form. And you bring up Stephen Bannon. Our friends over at Southern Poverty Law Center have said that he was the main driver behind Breitbart becoming a, quote, white ethno-nationalist propaganda mill. So whatever a white ethno-nationalist is, apparently Steve Bannon is the one out in front of
him. So he's going to be chief strategist for President-elect Trump.
Right, right.
And Reince Priebus, who's the RNC chairman, is going to be chief of staff. So, what strikes me is Donald Trump is trying to do is balance the outsider with the insider.
That's exactly what he's trying to do.
Because as much as we like outsiders in this day and age, you've got to have some people who know how the system works.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
The main thing is not whether they're an outsider or an insider. It's what's their political ideology. And does it match up with what Donald Trump promised on the campaign trail
right. On
the various issues? Because we all know that people are policy. If you get the wrong people in place, they can subvert the policy that even a president says he stands for. So that's going to be interesting to watch and see what happens.
If you want to know why Donald Trump won Pennsylvania and Ohio, among other those Rust Belt states, it's because of his opposition to the trade policies, which it's largely seen as taking a lot of economy away from those regions.
Right. But we'll see. He said he wants to bring the jobs back. The difference between wanting to and can you, because there's a reason a lot of these companies left, because they can make their products so much cheaper in these foreign countries. And if you get rid of a lot of these regulations that the American companies have to abide by, which costs their cost to go up and makes them have to move their companies to other places, then maybe you could
lower the corporate tax, by the way, which is a misnomer because corporations don't pay taxes. They pass those on to the consumers. So it's another consumer tax that the corporations have to pay. But you lower that and you go a long way into and get rid of some of the regulations. You go a long way into drawing some of these companies back.
Steve, what is the website people can go to read all this stuff? Here?
Right now, One News Now, you can go see our front stories about the protests and the inauguration shutdown threat. And there is going to be, if it's not already up, a poll question. We want to ask you, what executive orders should President Trump overturn first? So that's at onenewsnow.com. And it's
is there an all of the above?
There might be. I'm not sure how they're going to do it, but there might be one of those, yeah.
All right, thank you, Steve.
Thank you,
Steve Jordahl from OneNewsNow.com. Jeremy Wiggins in with me today. Eba Tagliano's out. Walker Wildman. Walker, what do you got on our Facebook page?
We're still running Facebook Live, and I have putting up some of the stories that Steve Jordahl just spoke about.
Also now joining us is George Barna. George, longtime friend of ours. He's well-known for his research and analysis when it comes to the Christian community. And in particular, we wanted to have George on to talk about how the Christian community voted last Tuesday and why. George, this is Tim. Good morning to you.
Tim, great to be with you. And before we launch into anything, first thing I want to pull out of our data is to congratulate you and your team for what you did during the election. One of the questions that we had in our election night survey, we interviewed 3,000 people that night about how they voted that day and why. And one of the things we asked them were, who were the most influential media analysts in helping you as a voter decide who you wanted to vote for? This was among the conservative Christians across the country. And you all were in the top 10. You, for instance, were tied with Megyn Kelly. So, I mean, congratulations to you guys for really stepping up and doing a great job and having real positive influence on the outcome.
I did not know that. So we finished in the top 10?
Yeah, no, nobody knows that because I haven't released that yet. You're the first one to know. But
awesome. You heard it here first.
Okay, well, thank you. Yeah, we need that. And please send a participation trophy along with that so we can have it in our office here. But that's good to know. Well, we tried to do what we could to educate the Christian community on the differences between Mr. Trump and his policy ideas and Secretary Clinton and hers. There's a vast difference on many different issues. First of all, where is your website where people can go and subscribe or read your information, George?
Yeah, culturefaith.com will be the best place. It's the American Culture and Faith Institute. And we've been doing research tracking of Christian conservatives across the country now for several years. And we put all that information up there. People can subscribe to the newsletter, comes out every Wednesday, and gives our latest out of the research. That's free. And so hopefully that'll help us all to stay informed about what's going on in our culture.
I kept watching your statements and your press releases along the way during the primary and then the general election, George. And the Christian community changed. I guess the Christian vote was all split up during the primaries, as you might expect. But then once it became clear that President-elect Trump would be the Republican nominee, still there seemed to me there was some hesitancy on the part of a lot of Christians because of Trump's, I guess, personal life, past and things that he's said and done. And what about that?
Yeah, that's exactly right, Tim. I mean, at the beginning of the primary season, Mr. Trump was running about fifth among conservative Christians across the country. He was drawing only about 11% of the conservative Christian vote. And that maintained itself at the beginning of the primaries, but then, as you mentioned, once he became the nominee or the presumptive nominee, suddenly, they realized, okay, it's going to be a Trump-Clinton race by and large. And so his support jumped up to 71% in the month of April, late April, early May. And from there until Election Day, it slowly grew until that third debate And that really was a turning point where when Chris Wallace brought up the question about abortion, mm-hmm. right after that debate, Mr. Trump's support shot up to about 89%. And then on Election Day, among Christian conservatives, Mr. Trump got 94% of the vote, making them the single largest support bloc that he had of all the different groups that you could analyze in the election.
Is that because they were, the Christian community was pro-Trump's ideas, or because they're scared of Hillary's ideas, or both?
Again, a really interesting pattern emerged during the campaign early on when he had that 71% of the support, when it became clear he would be the nominee. The vast majority of that support was because those people did not want Hillary Trump in office. And a secondary reason, second on the list, was that they liked some of his issue stance. But on Election Day, what we found was that that had flipped. It switched such that 70% of the people that voted for him among Christian conservatives said it was primarily because of his stance on issues, and 57% said it was driven by their dislike of Mrs. Clinton. We allowed them to give their top two reasons. Nothing else was close to those two reasons.
George, after the primaries were over, I looked at Trump, you know, the nominee, and I said, I don't know if enough Christians will turn out for him. I said, I think it may be worse than even Romney, because a lot of Christians didn't vote for Romney because he was a Mormon. But I believe I was wrong. What were the final numbers compared to Romney in 12 and then Trump's vote in 16 when it comes to the Christian community?
Well, Romney's vote was in the low 80s back in 2012. And with Mr. Trump, with the conservative Christians at 94, that's a big jump. The other important thing to recognize is the turnout among Christian conservatives. With Mr. Romney running, there was a lot of concern about his Mormon background. There were some other concerns as well. So that turnout was more depressed. This time around, and we're still working on getting an accurate number on this, but the preliminary number we have of turnout among Christian conservatives, the Sage Cons, as we call them, the spiritually active, governance-engaged conservatives, mm-hmm. was 92%, which, again, is practically unheard of. So this was perceived by that group of people as a make-it-or-break-it election. This was one of those things where they realized, if we don't show up and vote for this guy now, we've got no reason to complain for the next 8 years as we just get pounded and our freedoms are taken away. It's our fault because we didn't show up. They realized that. They showed up. They voted almost in unity, and you can see the result.
George, this is Jeremy. You talked about the issues that were separating Trump and Clinton. What are you seeing as the main issues that got such massive turnouts on Election Day?
There were two things in particular, Jeremy, that our surveys were showing. Number one on the list, and again, this was fascinating to me. So many things in this election were, what? Are you kidding me? Number one on the list was abortion. Now, the reason I say that shocks me is because at the beginning of the election, what we saw was that Christians had what's known as issue fatigue. They've been fighting the abortion war for so long and felt like they were making so little progress that it was no longer the main issue to them. It was still dear to their heart. They're still, yes, pro-life, no doubt about it. You know, 7 days a week, they're there. But as a driving issue, no, that wasn't it. But by the end of the election, there were two things. There was abortion, and there was the Supreme Court nominations. And, of course, the Supreme Court nominations are tied largely to what may happen with abortion. So, yeah, I mean, those were the two driving factors. Third on the list, but really far behind, was religious freedom. And then fourth on the list in terms of driving issues was the size and authority of government. They want less government. They want it to be less intrusive, less powerful, to have less of a say in their lives and take less of their money.
Talking to George Barna. Hey, George, give your how do people can subscribe or read your information that you survey people on again?
Yeah, the website is at culturefaith.com, and you'll see all kinds of things there. We have special reports, but the newsletter is something that'll keep you, the SageCon Weekly is what it's called. That's something that'll keep you up to date every week as we're finding new things.
You know, George, this whole election process with Donald Trump has almost been surreal in a way. And I know the political left in this country, they want to wake up from their nightmare if they can quit crying so they can find a safe space. Who would ever, you could write a novel or a television script whoever would be looking at that would say, no, this is too unbelievable to you're going to have to make this more believable in order for people to watch your movie or read your book. By that I mean, who would have ever thought that a New York business tycoon with a Playboy background would be the guy that the Christian community got behind
with a reality show?
with a reality show, and with bad character, would be the guy the Christian community ultimately rallied around. And you know, I think it's like some have said, the Christian community really didn't rally around Donald Trump per se as a quote political savior. I think they rallied around the platform of the party and the pro-life cause being very important, which Mr. Trump said committed himself to, and he seems to be following through with that. CBS last night, 60 Minutes, he said, I'm appointing pro-life judges. And then the people that he decided to surround him with. I've never seen a guy with such a secular background like Donald Trump want to hang around with a bunch of Christians, like Mike Pence, for example. It's just so odd, the mix here. And does that strike you the same way?
Yeah, it certainly did. You know, but I guess to me, on election night, as I was watching this unfold, the thing that I know it struck a lot of Christians across the country too is this is unbelievably cool, because what we are witnessing literally is a miracle.
Yes.
You know, Donald Trump did not win this election. God put him into power as a reprieve for God's people. And I think it shows that God is willing to use anybody who is teachable and is willing to pursue, you know, a different kind of agenda. So I think, you know, right now we are in a very, very critical time for the Christian community, not to sit back and laugh at the left, but to sit back and jump down to our knees and thank God and realize this, we've got 4 years now to honor him with how we follow up this miracle that he's given to us.
Yeah, exactly. I have no doubt. I mentioned earlier, George, before you go on with us, the secular progressives led by Hillary Clinton on the political left, they were about to pounce on our heads. And by that, I mean, I'm convinced within a year or two, American Family Radio would have gotten a letter from the FCC or the IRS or somebody, and it would have said, Dear Mr. Wildman, your radio network must cease talking about homosexuality, or you will lose your radio license and you will receive a fine. That's the kind of thing that was on its way. Trust me. That kind of thing was on its way had they won.
And I think it would have gone even farther. I think that letter also would have said, and you can no longer talk about God publicly. I think that's
They would have gone that far ultimately. Okay.
I believe so. Yeah. With religious freedom, some of the things that I know they had in the plans, that's where this was moving towards.
Well, thank you, George, for that, for all your research and analysis. And please send me that report on the top 10 influencers on Christians.
We'll do. Yeah, congratulations, and thank you so much for all you do.
All right, George. Jeremy, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
When is your show on?
Saturday mornings at 6 a.m. Central, called In the Trenches.
Walker?
All right.
Okay, folks, Alistair Begg is straight ahead with some great Bible teaching. Then the news, then on with your day here on American Family Radio. Take care, everybody. See you tomorrow.